Good afternoon. Thanks so much for coming. It's actually perfect that I'm following Evelyn because we're all thinking about vaccines and how policy is made around vaccines. And I'm going to be talking, that's actually going to play a lot into what I'm talking about, which is the application of genomic technologies, some very new genomic discoveries, the potential applications to the prevention and control of infectious diseases, and the ethical implications that that will arise around using this type of information in policy making. Oh, I have no financial relationships to disclose. So just to kind of provide a very, very brief background to what I'm going to be talking about, humans vary, as we all know, humans vary a lot in our susceptibility to infectious disease, in the severity and how sick we get, in our infectivity or the likelihood of transmitting to other people. We vary in our response to vaccination and to treatments once we're sick. And there are a lot of factors that play into this variation. Genetics is just one of these factors, but more and more advances in genomic technologies such as genome-wide association studies and whole genome sequencing of pathogens have led to a proliferation of genomic discoveries that are relevant to infection and could potentially be used. And it's becoming clear that there is important genetic variation at the level of humans, us, and the pathogen. Unfortunately, we're all becoming too familiar with this image, the Ebola virus, and also at the level even of the vector. And then, of course, there are other complicating factors like host-pathogen interactions and the influence of the microbiome and so on. So we received a SEER grant from NHGRI, the National Human Genome Research Institute, to explore the ethical, legal, social, and policy implications of advances in genomics for infectious disease management. So we're kind of looking at all at ethical, legal, social implications. I'm going to focus on kind of ethics of policymaking today. And this is a P20, which is kind of a smaller planning grant to sort of see it's very early to talk about this stuff, to talk about the application of genomics in any sort of policy making. But we think it's important to be thinking about, and this is kind of to kind of assess the field and see, and then prepare for a larger center, a SEER center, if it's timely and appropriate. So these are kind of our core team. Gail Geller and Jeff Kahn are the co-PIs and whom I work with at the Berman Institute of Bioethics. And then we work with a really kind of a true interdisciplinary group at Hopkins, and it's been fantastic to kind of to work with and learn from people in such diverse fields in the School of Medicine and infectious disease physicians and vaccine policy. So I just kind of want to briefly state our methods up till now have been pretty exploratory. We have frequent meetings with our core steering committee that I just showed you, and then also with a larger working group that it encompasses even more experts at the university. And then we've done 10 key informant interviews with external experts. And so what I'm going to do today is go through some examples of potential applications of genomics to infectious disease policy. And I'm going to use three diseases to illustrate these and talk about some of the either existing or potential or future genomic discoveries made possible by advancing technologies, and then potential public health applications and the ethical challenges that could arise given these. And then I'm going to conclude by talking about a number of factors that will sort of shape the ethical considerations around this. So again, we talked to 10 experts, mainly in the U.S., also Canada and the U.K., in kind of all sectors, academia, industry, local government, agencies, and public health sector. And so these are the three, so I'm going to be talking about influenza, which is, and these are, and measles in the context of the MMR vaccine, and then Ebola, which sort of because it's so timely and it's unfortunately on all of our minds. These differ in kind of disease characteristics. As Evelyn said, pandemic flu, the vaccine, it is preventable, but it's about, you know, up to maybe 60% effective, the vaccine. Measles, highly infectious, it is vaccine preventable. And Ebola, actually, we know so little about the science and epidemiology of Ebola right now, but, you know, we know that it's currently not preventable, not treatable. We don't know much about this. There is variable severity, but we do know that there's high case fatality in epidemic situations. So I'm going to, this is just to kind of show how I'm going to talk about these three cases that could have implications for policy setting at different kind of levels of policy, like in a workplace situation, like mandates for flu vaccine, at the kind of state public health agency level or globally. And so, okay, so I want to preface this by saying that some of these potential applications, and first of all, that I'm not personally advocating for any of them, that they might seem at this point might seem kind of way out there, and somewhat provocative, and these today these scenarios are hard to imagine that we would apply, you know, this information to policy, but we can't deny that the science is advancing, that and whether or not it's going to be useful or even appropriate for public health planning will be debated, but. The science is out there, and it has the potential to be used in certain contexts. So the point of what we think it's important to think about the potential ethical implications ahead of time, so that any policy that is made, that these are used in an ethical and responsible manner, in a way that minimizes harm to individuals and maximizes benefit, which of course is the goal. So to look at our first case. There is known genetic association to antibody response to vaccines, to multiple vaccines, in this case influenza, and so it's in terms of how well you're protected, and there are people who are kind of non-responders. And so if you think about, and this is very kind of, you know, related to what Evelyn talked about, how could this be applied if there were, you know, a genetic marker for how well you were going to respond to flu vaccine, could in a pandemic situation, could this be, you know, would we screen people, and then could this be used to restrict healthcare workers who are more likely to be a vaccine non-responder? You know, they have to stay home, or limit first responders in an emergency situation to those who are predisposed to respond better to the vaccine. And this gets into issues of, anytime you're talking about genetic reporting or disclosing genetic information, there are privacy and confidentiality issues, autonomy, and like you talked about, and then this overarching problem of weighing individual liberties against public protection, and when is it appropriate? This was a very recent discovery, and so I thought it would be kind of cool for us to think about. The MMR vaccine is associated with an adverse reaction. Just to give you a little background, about 2 to 5% of young children will experience febrile seizure, And this is, so they're rare, and they're most often totally benign. But any parent out there, if any of you have experienced it, it's terrifying for a parent to witness, and I mean to go through with their child. So there, and the MMR vaccine is highly effective. It's been widely used for a long time, and is generally well tolerated. But MMR vaccination, there's evidence that it almost triples the likelihood of a young child experiencing a febrile seizure in the 2 weeks following vaccination. So this paper just came out a few weeks ago reporting a link between certain gene variants and an increased likelihood of experiencing febrile seizure. So even though it's benign it's considered an adverse event, and you can imagine that maybe in the future that there is that something is slightly less benign, you could imagine that people would want maybe to screen, or someone would propose screening for genotype before vaccination, and it's not clear whether immunization programs have a moral obligation to screen for genetic risk factors, especially if screening is not cost effective. So that brings up one issue: when is cost? How should cost kind of play into these decisions? And there's there's a financial aspects to this, but also cost to society. If we're screening for the likelihood, increased likelihood of this event, and people are deciding to opt out, do we then let people opt out of vaccination and risk the risk to herd immunity? And we know, especially in the case of measles, we know how dangerous that is. And I have some quotes that are from our interviewees. I think in the interest of time, I would just not read them, so we come to Ebola. Now, their pathogen sequencing is already being widely used for source and contact tracing in infectious disease and for understanding disease transmission patterns. So this is not new, but contact tracing is not new, but rapid and cheap genome sequencing has allowed us to actually to accurately identify the source of an outbreak in a way that traditional contact tracing did not. So we have the ability, like in this example, to really trace a source of an outbreak, and you can even get down to the individual in some cases with some diseases and some outbreaks. So this, could this be used for quarantining, to quarantine exposed individuals or families? And then this brings up issues, potential issues of stigmatization and even blame and kind of even legal liability. Now, on the host side, the science is not there yet with Ebola, but just a couple weeks ago, there was an article that showed that genetic background in mice determines susceptibility and even resistance in some cases to hemorrhagic fever from Ebola. And so given the variability, given the variability in severity of infection, and surely researchers are going to be looking into the role of human genetic variability and how, and so what would this mean? Could genetic markers be used in travel restrictions or quarantine policy? And then this brings up, aside from kind of this thought restricting freedom of movement and autonomy, this also brings up issues in kind of justice, larger justice issues. How would the benefits on one hand and the burdens of harm related to any policy like this kind of be distributed among populations? You think about where in the world or what countries are being hit the hardest, and kind of the distribution of harms and benefits. So I want to. So obviously, this is a tiny sample of diseases. I haven't even touched on huge categories of diseases like vector-borne, waterborne, diseases with major global health implications. Or diseases that are chronic, like AIDS and tuberculosis, or have the potential to become chronic, hepatitis B, hepatitis C. So those characteristics are important to think about, along with a number of other conditions. And so, for example, when circumstances under which policy might be enacted during a pandemic or resource scarcity, could genomics, if there are decisions being made about priority of access of treatment or vaccines, could genomics be used as another stratifying, or should it be used as another stratifying variable? And then there is the whole issue of the probabilistic nature of genetic data and risk data. And that is, I thought this quote kind of illustrates that nicely. What threshold, or after what point, are we confident enough in a marker's predictive ability and sort of clinical utility to actually start to be able to use it? So that's a huge question. And then cultural context is going to be very important. In the U.S., we place, talked about privacy and autonomy. In the U.S., we place a heavy emphasis on individual liberties. Other places, it might be kind of the more emphasis on kind of societal benefits. And so these all kind of bring up this tension between population-based recommendations, which is kind of the standard in public health and works, and then kind of this whole personalized medicine or prevention in the genomic era. So I want to open it up to ask you where you think we're headed with this, and thank my colleagues. And also I want to just quick plug for a paper we should have that's coming out next week on the project.
Excellent. So. Thank you so much.
Now we'd like to open it up for questions. I just want to say that you've really taken us, like, historically looking at issues of vaccination, that we still have these ethical issues around that, and specifically in regards to healthcare professionals, to GIS mapping and these novel approaches, both GIS mapping and genomic applications. So it's fascinating, and I just